so nice. Thank you.
So a study from Rasmussen Reports in 2013 showed that over 69% of Americans think that their fellow country folk are becoming ruder and less civilized. Many are likely to have confronted someone over their rude behavior. Many say that sales personnel especially are ruder than they were a decade ago. Adults over age 50 are more likely than their younger counterparts to think that it is rude for someone sitting next to them in public to talk on their cell phones. Are people really ruder than ever? Or could this same study have been done at any time and achieve the same results? The Bob Dylan lyric, "I was older than that yesterday, I'm younger than that now," comes to mind when I recall this story. Reverend Scott, my husband, and I had gone into a public place where we needed assistance from the front desk to find our destination. The young clerk was not overtly friendly, and her manner, it really grated on me. When we left the desk, I remarked to Scott, "What is wrong with their generation?" It's as if desire, self-pity, and pettiness, oops, that's my page. It's as if everyone is an imposition, that they don't have time or patience for anyone but themselves. Scott, who happens to be older than I, at least in calculable years, but that is all, chided me for my uncharitable response. "Really," he said, "that's what you got from that interchange?" I was so much older then. I can laugh at myself now, but in the moment I was riding my high horse miles from my humility. It strikes me that Charles Johnson, from our reading, discovered at the last, when he went to confront his neighbor, that all his anger dissolved in sadness. Sadness for his neighbor's lost hearing, but sadness also for his loss, a lost security, the realization that he, a meditation practitioner for 30 years, was still susceptible to anger, frustration, and self-pity. When anger melts away, we are quite often left, like Charles, with sadness. It is, I believe, anger's most reliable core. I was angry at first with the girl at the help desk, but really, in truth, I was sad. The constraints of our culture, and perhaps the demands of her job, and perhaps my inability to meet her generation with what they need, put a space between our souls. That's not annoying. That's painful. And we live with it every day. I was lucky in that instance that I walked away with a lesson. I don't always. Khalil Gibran, the spiritual writer, speaks often about these kind of lessons. And he shares, "I've learned silence from the talkative. I've learned toleration from the intolerant. And kindness from the unkind. Yet strange," he admits, "I am ungrateful to those teachers." Teachers abound. The driver that cut you off this morning? The man who says he loves you but he hates your sin? The woman who says she respects all people but hides her purse when you come near? Teachers abound, yet strange, I am ungrateful to those teachers. Zach Ebrahim, who I've spoken about before, recognizes his childhood bullies as his teachers. Zach is the son of a terrorist. His father was involved in terror plots to destroy our nation. Zach grew up chubby, and for this was taunted and bullied. But rather than allow a righteous anger to grow and cement itself in his ego, he used his emotional intelligence to develop empathy for all who are persecuted and alone. Zach, the son of a terrorist, is an activist for peace. Do you know how difficult it is to have that happen? He chose the path of sorrow and empathy, over anger and violence. Teachers abound. I'm sure I've been a teacher to folks before. That kind of a teacher. Again, as Khalil Gibran shares, I've learned silence from the talkative, toleration from the intolerant, and kindness from the unkind. To be grateful to these teachers, we need to get past our immediate reactions. I want to be clear. This is important to me. I do not doubt the usefulness of anger. Righteous anger has fueled revolutions, but it has also fueled terror. Anger has saved a beaten wife from her abuser, but it has also fueled her abuser. Anger in itself is not bad or wrong. It is a natural reaction. It can save and it can damn. My heart broke when I overheard someone I love say, "I just wish they wouldn't be so angry," when she saw passionate demonstrators as in an LGBTQ parade. Sometimes passion is mistook for anger, and sometimes anger is mistook for bad. Still, it is a spiritual practice, I believe, to find the spiritual lesson at the core of the anger. Because too often we hold on to that anger, to the annoyance, to the frustration, because the sadness underneath is scary as hell. There's a teacher in there. We often think of spiritual practice as a retreat, a chance to get away from those kind of teachers. We think of spiritual practice as that something that we are doing when we are not doing something else. In a world as busy as ours, as choked with information and stimuli, retreating is an absolute necessity. Retreating into prayer, into meditation, or simply stillness and reflection. If we don't do this, we will dry up and blow away, or become one with the motes of information that we tweet, email, and stare at from sunup to sundown. So when I was on sabbatical, I did my fair share of retreating. And at first, retreating itself can be a challenge. It's a different world. I ventured to Yogaville for a 4-day program. Yogaville is an ashram in West Central Virginia that has a Hindu core and a universalist outlook. I was excited to go, but when I pulled into the lot, I got one of those sinking feelings. What did I get myself into? Could I really feel at home here? I saw before me 4 young men clad in all white, spinning hula hoops and laughing. I gulped. The boys look like apparitions. No one could be that happy. So when I walked by and they asked me if I wanted to join them, I nodded no while feigning a pleasant smile, but inside I was running away as fast as humanly possible. I knew I wasn't there yet, in that place that they were inhabiting. At orientation, my fears only grew. I learned the rigidity and the demand of the spiritual practice there. We would wake up and arrive for a 45-minute spoken meditation at 5:45, followed by an hour-long yoga class, and then breakfast. And my dear friends, there was no coffee at breakfast. No coffee at all. I had to run to my tent and in secret make it with my camping stove just to get through the day. There was no sugar either in the food, which was kind of nice, and all vegan meals, which was great for me. Then later, after breakfast and a program, we would walk a mile to the temple and meditate in full silence for another half hour, then walk back for lunch. Another yoga class, an hour and a half, occurred in the evening, and then sometimes two yoga classes, and there was more. This was spiritual practice, sun up to sundown and past, every day. But after a day, the rhythm was amazing. And I found myself, against my better judgment, really retreating. The spiritual practice had grabbed me by my regenerate soul and shook off all the accumulated dust. I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now. By the time I left the ashram, I could have picked up a hula hoop and spun it around and smiled my ears off. I was so happy when I returned, I joked with Reverend Scott, "I'll see you in a few years, I'm going to go be a nun." He didn't take that too well. So if this sounds great to you, write it down, Yogaville, and ask Lord Google where it is and how to get there. And if not Yogaville, talk to me, I know of some other great retreat centers. Retreat is absolutely necessary, but not every retreat center is miles away. There's also a retreat center in you, a place you can go to retreat. We need this kind of retreat, too, because teachers abound. What's the phrase? The clean version? There's always another fabulous learning experience. And that's spiritual practice, too. It's not all ashrams and namaste and chapels. Feeling our way through this world that we are both in and of with grace and dignity, with a desire to keep learning, that's spiritual. And it's always available for practice. One afternoon at Yogaville, I was sitting and eating lunch. A few bites in, I must have swallowed something down the wrong pipe. You know, the fact that we can do that we can swallow down the wrong pipe, mess up this nearly instinctive activity, illustrates impeccably that we are always practicing. Never perfect, always practicing. Anyway, back to the story. At the ashram, one lunch, I had one of those coughing fits. One of those. I turned red. I was deeply frustrated and certainly embarrassed, maybe even a bit angry at my body for doing this to me in this peaceful place. And when I looked up with my eyes teary, I saw a yogi a couple tables away, looking directly at me. His eyes were teary as well, just pure empathy. He was feeling what I was feeling, it seemed. But his eyes weren't frustrated or embarrassed or angry. His eyes shone only sadness. My sadness, the core of my feelings back at me. And he didn't turn away. He was channeling compassion, holding me in empathy. Everyone else had turned away. We do that, right? When someone has a coughing fit, what makes us do that? It's not polite to stare. We want to give someone their space. Or is it that it's just too painful to watch? That we feel the person's pain and we don't want to? It was just a coughing fit. But what an awesome lesson. About what was at the core of my experience and about how hard it is to face, to see the sadness that our brothers and sisters carry just like us. I don't think we need any more words here, but I do believe we need practice. Because, my brothers and sisters, we live in Northern Virginia. And if we don't schedule it in, it's not gonna happen. I want to invite you to practice in one specific way. There are millions out there, but perhaps this might serve you. Record in your journal or in your own mind throughout the day all the times you feel angry or frustrated or annoyed. You might want to do this in the evening, thinking back over your day. Trace in your mind. Then ask, what is the sadness at the core of all of these experiences? And then meditate, pray, reflect, sit in stillness, whatever holds you, and resolve to practice another day. And the practitioners say, Amen. We have a hymn to sing together. This is hymn